I kid you all not, I have been sitting in my podcast seat for maybe a minute and 40 seconds. I apologize for us being on at 9 o'clock. I had a work function that I was late for, and then because of a bizarre set of circumstances, missed my train and had to take the later train. And thankfully, Mike Murphy and Beth Macklin were here waiting for me when I got here. Guys, how are you doing today?
I'm fine.
You
I
have
can't
a
believe
podcast
made it.
Seat?
Yeah, I was
you
also going to ask about
seat?
That.
It's just a chair in my basement.
Huh.
Well, where do you podcast?
I was hoping it's like an egg-shaped chair.
A throne of sorts?
No, I normally lay down like a lounging Caesar.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm in bed. I have a podcast pillow.
Yeah, I lay
podcast
down.
Pillow. That's pretty good. Now I feel like a failure for not having a podcast throne. Thanks, guys. Anyway, I am Joe Fortunato. The guy is Mike Murphy. The girl is Beth Macklin. And this is Bantering the Blue Shirts directly into your ear. We have a lot to talk about today. A goalie controversy or potentially lack thereof. Some Adam Clendenning stuff. And then some good Adam Clendenning stuff. We are going to be joined by a special guest probably in about a half hour. To talk a little bit more about Clendenning and his relationship with Noah, who is a young boy with autism that you saw in that tweet from the Rangers after the Rangers win over Chicago in Chicago. But before we get into any of that, this podcast is sponsored to you by our Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/bluesharpbanter. Yes, we are asking you to pay for this. A big thank you to Anthony Viola, Dan Lynch, Matt Bader, Eric Cohn, Michael Silvers, who's in the chat for the first time in 3 weeks, Trevor Kempner, Thomas Osa, Alexander Thornton, and Nicholas Forlenza for donating. And if you would like to get your name on that list, which would be awesome, you can at patreon.com/bluesharpbanter. All right, guys. The Rangers are down three forwards. Rick Nash. They're down four forwards. Rick Nash, Matt Zuccarello, Mika Zibanejad, Pavel Buchnevich, and Matt Pumple. Against Chicago, they're also down Ryan McDonough with a surprise flu. And they play a pretty good game against Chicago. In fact, these four games that they've started, Ronta, have been pretty good from a top-to-bottom defensive standpoint. The Rangers are finally winning the possession battle. It looks like they're starting to find their game a little bit. Is this a little weird, Beth?
It's a lot weird. I don't know exactly how weird it is. I'm going to settle on medium weird. What's weird is how much more tightly they play in front of Ronta, which there's a logic to it. But, you know, again, this raises the question, why not play like that all the time? And also how solid they can be with essentially a line missing, a top line missing. But really not missing in a way. Maybe there would have been a few more goals on there. But, you know, the problems I had with the game, the last couple games, did not have to do with the people who were missing. So, we're seeing some low-scoring games, which is what we were waiting for, some close games. And we had some good results. And last night really could have gone either way. So... weird again, but not that weird, not with this team.
Medium weird. I like the idea of medium weird. That's a good, like medium rare. You order a steak and it's medium weird. That's all. Mike?
Well, it's been interesting just because of where we were a week ago. You know, we talked about how, you know, what was it? You know, we talked a lot about, I think, how especially the Winnipeg and Chicago on the road, and then the Devils, which is never as easy as it should be, and then another game back at home in Chicago. And, you know, I think if you told any of us, the team would go 3-1, and their only loss was a game that they really could have and in many ways should have won. It was a one-goal loss to Chicago. We all would have taken it. And then to learn that, you know, what Ronta did in that stretch also makes it truly interesting. I'll just put it this way because I'm sure it's something we'll talk about a lot tonight, but it's been very interesting to see the reaction from some fans about Ronta's play and how people believe that
Lundqvist really needed to watch some games from the bench.
Isn't it just a horrifying realization? It's like, you know, those people exist and they're out there, but when they release themselves from the sand dug crevices that crabs live in, it's just it's an eye opening experience. And it's funny, so I wrote an article about how Vigneault is good at creating controversy and bad at controlling it. And in the article, I told everybody exactly what I said on Twitter when Ronta started his third game in a row, which was, I don't have an issue with Vigneault running with the hot hand in Ronta. What I do have an issue with is that this never seems to apply to the defense ever. And the responses were, there is no goalie controversy, you're an idiot. Ronta's the better goalie, you're an idiot. Or the defense is fine, you're an idiot. And all three of those are awful takes to have. So when I look at the way that this team is being analyzed, I don't understand why it's not okay to say, hey, listen, like, and here's the thing. A lot of the arguments that came down were, well, you can't shelter the goalie position. So if a goalie's not playing well, then the goalie has to be set. Lundqvist has not been playing great. I don't think anybody thinks Lundqvist isn't playing great. I don't think Lundqvist thinks he's been playing great. The difference is that Lundqvist is never really great through December. If you look at his statistics up until this point, they're always somewhat human before he works himself into a lather, and down the stretch, he becomes the Hank we all know and love. And not getting the opportunity to do that obviously fazed him. The quotes that Henrik Lundqvist said during this little streak weren't exactly endorsing that anything was happening or the situation itself, which, not that you'd expect it to be, but he said, quote, I've always had opportunities in the past to play up and down. I just get into a nice flow. It's a little different now. You play a couple, you sit out. Obviously, it's a different approach. He wants to play, and I want him to play. But my issue doesn't come from the fact that he's not playing. My issue comes from the fact that Vigneault has, in the past too, blamed a lot of these struggles on the goaltending position and refuses to take a look at some of the things that may lend themselves to the goaltending position not being where they want it. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was last week, to talk about the goaltending and to not talk about the defense is sort of an issue. No, Beth?
No, it's definitely an issue. Although the really strange thing is that with, you know, a few drastic exceptions, some bad moments, the defense just looked better in front of Ranta. Why is that? It's infuriating. He faced far fewer shots, and not just because they were playing the Devils. You know, so the math doesn't work out. Yeah, he had some good games, but, I mean, he faced far fewer shots than Lundqvist had faced in his last few games. So, you know, those really aren't equivalent situations because they really weren't facing equivalent pressure. And that's not to take anything away from Ranta. I do need to talk about how you said running with the hot hand instead of riding the hot hand. And you realize how upsetting I find this phrase. I don't know what to do with it, although I'd rather run with it than ride it. I'm not going to lie.
Well, wait a minute now. Works himself into a lather, I thought that was good.
Run with the hot hand.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying. So here's the dirty little secret. Beth makes everything dirty whenever she has an opportunity to, and she's taken Ride the Hot Hand to a totally different place than anyone.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Where else could it go?
That is the only place it is.
I was wrapped up in Joe said flow, Hank getting into a flow and working himself into a lather, and all I could think of was all those Head and Shoulders commercials.
Yeah, that's what he wants. To highlight Beth's point about riding the hot hand, by the way, obviously my coming into this podcast 3 seconds before it started was not ideal. Can I just talk about how upset I am that Beth doesn't have to lick a Ranger that Brady Shea scored against the Devils? And now Beth doesn't have to
lick a Ranger. I was going to bring it up if you hadn't.
It's like getting a birthday present and then you're not allowed to open the birthday present up and they give it to some other kid. That's what this feels like.
No second Christmas. We were all told there'd be a second Christmas, and then
it would have been special. It really would have been.
Well,
especially
it would have been something.
You know,
the story in the paper would have been as the police pulled away the crazy woman, she was screaming, "Ride the hot hand, ride the hot hand." And the Patreon would have had to go to the bail money.
Yeah,
but
that would have helped.
Now the Patreon goes to us. It does not go to Beth's bail, which is wonderful. Beth, to back up your point, though, now that we've gotten all that out of the way, here are some side-by-side statistics. 5-on-5 shots against per 60. So this judges how many shots a team would give up at even strength for 60 minutes. Lundqvist is 34.7. Ronta's 22. 5-versus-5 high danger shots faced per 60. Lundqvist is 26. Ronta's 11. And then raw 5-versus-5 shots faced. So as shots against was the first one that I gave out was the saves that actually had to be made. This is just attempts on net. So they can hit the net, miss the net. Lundqvist is 87 per 60. Ronta's 51 per 60. So there is a path of logic to the team playing both better in front of Ronta and differently. We talked about it a little bit. It's been broken down. The Rangers kind of give Ronta a little bit more room to make saves, which they should be doing for Lundqvist, may I add. And they try to handle those rebounds and play them out. With Lundqvist, the Rangers take a little bit more of a, okay, we can run and gun a bit more because we have him behind us. And obviously there have been some pretty drastic results on the back end of that. But you can't tell me, oh, Ronta's the better goalie. Ronta deserves to be starting. And look at these statistics and not see that there is a discrepancy between the game that the two goaltenders are looking at. Ronta's getting an easier workload. And outside of the two games against Chicago, I don't remember him making – you know, those unbelievable jaw-dropping, sprawling saves. And that's not to take anything away from him, because I think he's been fantastic. Mike, anything you want to throw into this?
Well, it's something we've kind of – I always like to talk about how Ronta is underrated and how he's a very good goaltender in his own regard. And, you know, it was great seeing him play so well in two games against the team that we know – I don't know if people remember, Ronta cost us Ryan Haggerty. So it's a pretty big win in that regard. But what's so interesting about this is, you know, Joe, you alluded to before, but then, you know, we kind of got sidetracked with licking and lather. But the
lathered licking.
good alliteration and creepy L words. Especially with, you know, we got to see Clendenning again. And I know, you know, a lot of people point out, you know, he had the one tough turnover in the defensive zone. And he had a zone entry that he kind of fanned on a pass and it turned into a rush the other way. But also in that game, he broke up a 3-on-1 against Chicago. And also in that game, he wasn't one of the three Rangers defensemen, or four, I think, with what is it? Holden, Klein, Stahl, and Girardi, who all have this bizarre tendency to drop to a knee very prematurely and then just lay their stick down on the ice to attempt to take away passing lanes. And then they always get, especially guys like Panarin, just skate around them and find the passing lane that's behind them. And there's the amazing gif of Stahl just, you know, like a very lazy teacher gesturing at a chalkboard with a pointing stick, just like, now you gotta look over here, but I'm not gonna move for you. I'm just gonna point with my long stick. It just, like, that was his idea of defense. And we talk about how Ronta's been getting better defense, and he has, but yet we see things like that, and it's so frustrating that those rules don't apply to guys like, you know, and I don't have as many issues with Stahl. I know I singled him out there, but especially Klein and Girardi this year. I know Holden is this impossible to understand. I mean, Holden delivered again, and obviously with the overtime goal, no one knows what the hell he is. I don't even, you know, I don't, when he looks in mirrors, I don't think anything shows up in the reflection. Nothing about him makes sense, but it is what it is. So it's really, really interesting to see how the team reacts differently for Ronta and to try to figure out why that is. And to see them play this well when they're missing all these big players, I mean, no Nash is a huge deal. You know, supposedly the Rangers can be getting him back tomorrow, but one of the games the Rangers played without Vesey, you know, no Zibanejad for a long time, no Buchnevich. Pumpel, you know, I think people would have said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we hadn't met Pumpel. Why does it matter the other lineup? But, you know, all that makes a difference. So.
And it's a totally different mentality, too, when you look at the way certain players are held to some standards and others. And the point is not to continue to harp on the same thing. I think a lot of the excuse from the media about why they don't ask these questions or why they don't harp on it is because, you know, it is what it is and Vigneault's not going to change, so why bother? And to me, that's not the point of journalism. The point of journalism is to point these things out. You can't look at Adam Clendenning, and you know what? This is a good segue into one of my bigger issues, which is you have Clendenning in the lineup yesterday, and it's an emergency basis because Ryan McDonagh has the flu. You're down by a goal against Chicago. Clendenning doesn't see the ice the final 7 minutes of the game. With the goalie pulled, Dan Girardi is the lone defenseman on the ice, and then it's Girardi and Holden. That doesn't make sense in any world, and I'm not even making the argument that Clendenning being in there would have made a difference, because more than likely in that situation you're losing the game. But you put your best players out there, and you give your best players the right moments to help you. Clendenning is a guy who has offense. He should be out there. What's clear is Vigneault has no space for him on this team, and he has no desire to put him into this team. It's the same thing with McElrath. And the argument that people give me is, oh, you think they're saviors, you think they're going to be Stanley Cup contenders, you think it's going to make all the difference. I don't. Here's the problem. Even if you're making the argument that Adam Clendenning has only played in 8 games this year and his numbers are great because of a small sample size, you've had 2.5 years of terrible Dan Girardi on the top pairing. You've had 30 games of a really rough Kevin Klein this year. So at what point do they get held to that standard? I'm not saying Clendenning is going to come in and change the world, but I'm saying he may be an improvement. And if the goal is to win the Stanley Cup, it shouldn't matter who you upset. Veteran status, tenure, all that goes out the window when Henrik Lundqvist is the guy who's on the other end of the sword. And in this instance, he has been. If Vigneault is going to run with the hot hand, ride the hot hand for Beth, if Vigneault is riding the hot hand with Henrik Lundqvist and Antti Raanta, then why can't you ride the hot hand with Adam Clendenning? People told me today, well, Clendenning's a turnover machine. Here's some stats about that.
Oh, my
Clendenning
God.
Clendenning has 2 turnovers and 2 takeaways in his 8 games. For reference, Brady Shea has 25 turnovers and 4 takeaways. Fine. Dan Girardi has 21 turnovers and 3 takeaways. You may have heard me talk about takeaways or giveaways not being the worst thing in the world because it means you have the puck. The caveat to that is if you give the puck away a lot and your possession numbers are good, that's good. Those are the guys who are at the top of the turnover list. When Dan Girardi has the puck 40% of the time and he's a team leader in turnovers, that's a problem. And again, I'm not saying Klein or Girardi sitting for Clendenning is going to change the world. I'm just saying that if everybody was held to the same standards, we wouldn't see this frustration and this confusion. Because again, Girardi should not be on the ice with a minute left. I don't care if you think he's still a first-pairing defenseman. He's never been an offensive defenseman. It's just not the right spot for him. And Holden, Mike, to your point, I think Holden is a very good bottom four defenseman. He's not a good top pairing defenseman, although with that said, he did relatively good with Girardi yesterday. But Holden really started to flourish when he was sheltered a little bit, and he started finding his offense a little bit, and he's become a solid defenseman for the Rangers. Mark Stahl has improved. Dan Girardi has not, and Kevin Klein has regressed, and Shea has his ups and downs, and here we are. So it's not a matter of being negative about everything that Vigneault does. It's not a matter of saying, oh, Clendenning coming into the lineup is going to make all the difference in the world. It's just saying you've had 2.5 years of something that is not working. Why are you not at least trying something else? And I've ranted too long. Whoever just sighed, you can talk.
Well, it's me. I don't have anything to say, though. I mean, the...
Well, you better find something to say.
Oh, boy. You can go back to lifting, I guess. But no, it's a really interesting trying to figure out, you know, what is it about Clendenning that Vigneault doesn't... I'm not sure if it's fair to say doesn't trust or doesn't like. You know, it's tricky, and it's also a shame that we're focused so much on this, because there's so many other things to talk about with the team. I mean, you know, getting to see Jensen and Hrivík and, you know, all this other stuff that's going on with the team. But it's, you know, and also how, even though he didn't score, you know, how great BC looked against Chicago last night. But it's hard to try to figure out what is it about Clendenning's game that, you know, that Vigneault doesn't like or that he doesn't find a use from it. And it's, I mean, you don't have to be, you know, someone who follows, you know, analytics and believes in the value of possession and all that stuff to know that, you know, when you're down in a game, you shouldn't have Dan Girardi on the ice towards the end of the game, because there's a reason why, you know, Girardi doesn't have, you know, his turnover numbers aren't crazy, because he doesn't have the puck a lot. When he does, it goes very badly, and everyone knows that. I think Dan Girardi knows that. It's not a secret. You know, he has a very meat and potatoes approach to defense, and in many ways, there's nothing wrong with that. In the grand scheme of things, if Girardi was paid, you know, $1.5 million a year, it would be not the problem that it is, but of course, that would also mean it would be a lot harder to not justify keeping him in the lineup and also playing him continually in the you know, the top pair. We finally got to see, you know, it's this nightmare we've been like forecasting all year long in the podcast, the Rangers defense without McDonough. And we saw it, and of course, it looked really rough, and, you know, it goes to show just how good Ronta was, but it also goes to show how, you know, how much is still wrong with the blue line, and how much is still wrong with trying to figure out, you know, identifying what roles players should play is a very big part of coaching, because it's talent assessment, it's understanding how pieces fit together, it's understanding who will succeed at, you know, different situations. And you see something like, oh, Brandon Peary, his shot is so damn good, I can't ignore it, put the guy on the power play. We see Vigneault do something like that, and you say, oh, well, you know, if he can see that, that's a good thing. You know, that's a good sign. But then we see Girardi on the ice towards the end of the game and Clendenning sitting, and, you know, it's hard to connect the dots. And then you also understand that, you know, Vigneault obviously has a say in the power play, but he doesn't, you know, he's not the power play coach or anything. So it's really frustrating to try and identify what it is about Clendenning that Vigneault doesn't like.
We don't get to see him enough to figure it out. No, I mean, we just don't get to see enough of his game to figure out what it could be about his game. But again, the only thing I can keep thinking is that, you know, finding out at the end of last season that Girardi not only had been playing badly, but had one leg in a concussion. And that was the choice that was who we put out in the playoffs. As soon as he could walk again, it seems.
That's
so,
most of the way toward the Pirate. When he's a scurvy.
And again, I think he'd make a great Pirate.
Which he could have.
There's
we don't
no
know.
Personal attack going on here at all. But yeah, I mean, I think even if we could figure it, I don't think we'd be able to figure it out, because I don't think it's necessarily there. I don't think we can pinpoint a reason the same way we can't pinpoint a reason why, and don't even get me started on turnovers. Oh my God, Keith Yandle, turnovers, that whole discussion, can't even do it again. I'll just start screaming the way I start screaming when I think about Kevin Hayes' skate going into poor Brady Shea's teeth.
No.
I can't.
He's getting dental work today. That's the most messed up part about the whole thing.
Yeah, I had thought it was just nice simple stitches or something. When I heard dental work, I just almost passed out on the floor.
Which means he played through that too, which that's a man right there.
Beth, imagine how much blood he swallowed last night.
I mean, I remember seeing him go to the bench with his face kind of cradling his face, but yeah, I definitely didn't see him acting like he had some sort of major injury, and I imagine that he was out so long because they had to get it to stop bleeding, which is, yeah, it's just more than I can bear thinking about. Other thing I can barely bear thinking about, but let me know if I'm going off track, was, all right, so two things about the offense last night. And again, if there's something else, we didn't really get to do our pregame today, so I know there may be other plans, but oh my God, somebody rushed the net. Anybody. I mean, that's where I miss Nash most last night, was somebody just go to the freaking net. I don't think we took a shot from anywhere except the exact same place on the left side until almost the end of the first period.
The only guy driving
the exact same
net
shot a number of times. Wait, what, Joe? Yeah.
The only guy driving the net was VC. I mean, it was really him, and then at the very end it was Miller and then maybe Hayes, and that was it. And look, you miss Nash there. You miss
Zibanejad.
Yeah, Zibanejad there. There's and not having McDonough hurts too, because I'm sure guys are kind of sitting back a little bit and knowing that they don't have a full-fledged defense. I mean, Adam Clendenning's answer, are you talking about our defense? It's one of the most spectacular things of all time. But
that really is. Mike, thank you for reminding the world of that wonderful moment.
Mike is a beacon of joy in a dark, dark place. And, you know, we're in the process of truly trying to figure out what this Rangers team is, because they're very Jekyll and Hyde. We expected to know a lot more about them at this point than we have. And by all indications, leading up to this four-game stint from Ranta, I was expecting things to go south. Not because of Ranta, just in general. The Rangers were trending down. The possession metrics were down. They were not playing good hockey. And then all of a sudden,
maybe
out of the
blue.
Maybe
we go backwards all the damn time now. What is up with that? The last minute of the game last night?
Yeah, that.
Running
that
out
was
the clock on our own?
That was
one
unforgivable.
Goal loss? What are you doing?
That was as unforgivable as it gets.
You're waiting for the perfect play, Beth.
I mean, the Blackhawks were baffled.
Right. You can forgive VC from the point of him being a rookie and, okay, fine. You can't – Holden has to be better than, you know, what he ended up doing. And I think that's part of the frustration too, is if you have a guy like Clendenning out there on the ice who – you know, knows what he's doing in that situation, then maybe that'll make a difference for people. Maybe that'll make – and again, I'm not saying the Rangers would have won the game. More than likely, they would not have. But you put your best players on the ice in that situation. It is 9:30. Nick is on hold. Does anyone want to talk about anything else quickly before we bring Nick on to talk about the Clendenning stuff?
I mean, I have stuff to talk about after that.
Yeah, that's fine. Then we can do that. We are joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I am good. For those of you who do not know, I kind of teased this a little bit today. Nick, let me get your Twitter feed right, because if I get it wrong, I'm going to feel bad. It is tree.
It's underscore turdy, T-U-R-T-Y, underscore tree,
there
which
is
a tree. Playoff of Pat Foley's tree turdy tree call.
Tree.
Yeah, I forget the broadcaster. They always joke about it's tree turdy tree and the turd. So I thought that's Blackhawks thing. So
well, we're going to get into why that may be. So if you were around during the Rangers' victory over the Blackhawks in Chicago, you might have seen the Rangers tweet out a photo of Adam Clendenning with a young man named Noah. Noah is Nicholas's son who has autism, and we're bringing Nick on to talk a little bit about their relationship with the Clendennings and what Clendenning is doing to kind of help raise awareness. You hear a lot about players who do things like this. There was a young boy whose name escapes me who was with Tortorella during the Winter Classic, if you guys remember. he got some play during 24/7. I can't believe I don't remember his name. And this is another one of those situations of just someone who obviously is a role model and has an opportunity to make a difference in someone's life doing just that. So, Nick, why don't you give us the lowdown?
Sure. We'll start. He's nine. So about 7 years ago, he was diagnosed with autism. And about three-ish years later or so, after getting him into some speech therapy and occupational therapy, and a little bit of behavioral therapy, my wife's mom, the big Ice Hawks fan, Ice Hawks being the AHL affiliate of the Blackhawks out in Rockford. And, you know, if it wasn't for her side of the family, you know, we probably wouldn't be talking about this today. So it took him to an Ice Hawks game. Wasn't the easiest because he has autism. He also has sensory processing disorder, has epilepsy. And at first it was hard for him to take it because it's loud. You know, the BMO Harris Bank Center seats about 6,000. So and it can get pretty raucous. When you have a child that has autism, I think as he grows older or she grows older, and as you grow older with more experience, you go, okay, what you find out what works and what doesn't work. So, we didn't get headphones for him at that time. So he was covering his ears a lot and it took a while for him to get out of his shell. And, you know, that's okay. It's just with him, it's used. He needs to get used to someplace. Sitting, watching, we decided to go to warm-ups because, like I said, my wife's mom, huge hockey fan. They're huge hockey fans. I sort of was in and out. You know, I can remember when the Blackhawks went to the Stanley Cup and then got blanked by the Penguins in the 90s. But, you know, you could say I was a bandwagon fan. Then we did this, and we did the warm-ups, and guy flips a puck over to Noah, and okay, that's cool, and, you know, we take a picture and go from there. And then where Noah's going to preschool, there's a season ticket holder, and she had set up with the Ice Hogs PR people. They had someone reading, and the same guy that was reading was the certain guy that put the puck to the kid, and that was Adam. Noah, as you can see in the video that the Rangers posted, today?
It might have been yesterday.
Yesterday, I can't remember.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
It was yesterday. He's not shy. anxiety maybe, but he's not shy. He will light up a room. Not afraid to go to anybody. Wanted to listen to Adam, knew this is the guy that, you know, flipping his puck, must be something special to him, sat in his lap, we have the pictures, you know, I don't know if Adam's like, you know, what is this kid doing, but that's how it went. And then after that, Noah's all Adam all the time, got him a jersey an Ice Hawks jersey for that. Ice Hawks jersey here, Ice Hawks jersey there. You know, it's a yearly thing. And slowly but surely, you know, this relationship, I think, between Adam and Noah sort of grew. Lucky enough to win a practice jersey from the Booster Club raffle. And we were both wearing it. And I want to say, some lady says, you know, hey, nice jerseys. And no one would really say that. And then, you know, it's that double take later on, you go, I think that was his mom. Because his parents had come to watch games before. So I think that's a little bit of maybe his mom said something, you know, and probably asked, who's the kid in the Clendenning jersey? Not necessarily me. I don't, you know, make a hill of beans of difference, but, you know, here's this kid in a mini Clendenning jersey, right? So as time went on, you know, there's events that the Ice Hogs do, so he's bowled with him when they've done charity bowling. I mean, that's sort of the cool thing to have an AHL team. I mean, yeah, you can do that in New York, and I know Chicago has events and stuff like that, but I think in a smaller town, whether it's Hartford, Grand Rapids, stuff like that, it's a Utica, even a better example, is it's small knit, so you can have that a little bit, you know, get closer to players that could be playing in the NHL. So he's bowled with him a couple of times. And so on, like I said, yeah, it's been a good thing. And I think for, you know, I wouldn't say I'm not necessarily bringing awareness, but at least the inclusion, I think is what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that, you know, once again, if it wasn't for my wife's side, this all wouldn't have been happening. But I think with Noah idolizing Adam, Noah wouldn't have started hockey. And one of the things with Noah is that he has what, from an OT standpoint, he has what's called proprioceptive, I think is what the term is. Basically, he needs deep pressure. He's one of those kids that needs deep pressure to sort of normalize himself. And, of course, what do? In hockey? You skate. You push off. He wants deep pressure on his feet. So hockey's perfect for him. So he started taking hockey lessons. And Rockford Park District has a wonderful therapeutic recreation department. And they got him into lessons, but with, you know, modifications that, you know, he takes his own time. And it took a while, you know. You wouldn't see him advancing as quicker as other kids, but you slowly but surely he went from, you know, what was it, to termites, and from termites to minor hawks and so on, and moved up. And I mean, he did, and it's sort of, and I don't want to sound too ableist, but it's cool to see him progress. You know,
of course.
It comes down to but, you know, the important part is, once again, the inclusion, the acceptance of, you know, a park district or even a hockey community to say, okay, he needs to be doing this. It's good for him. So that's the important part here. And so, mm-hmm. and like I said, it's indirect from him, but it's there. And it's good to see, because then I get more involved, just to see what other places do. And then you see, you know, more special hockey. And the thing is, you know, okay, let's go to Adam getting traded, right? Or actually step back one thing, you know, Adam goes to Chicago, right? Gets called up.
Yeah.
And I can remember when he actually got the first goal when they were playing in Calgary, you know, it was the feed from Hossa and the slap shot. And I think both my wife and I screamed, Noah got thrown off that he kicked me in the back. So you know, he scores four game tryout, or it felt like four games, because it seemed like that was Q's MO, is give a rookie four, it, at that time was like four games, it works great, then if not, sit him on the bench, and there you go.
Where could we
same
ever
thing happened with Fostalbach.
Something like that.
I'm sorry?
I said, where could we ever feel like something like that? Not in New York, for sure.
Well, I mean, and that's the, you know, and that's the parallel I'll jump to a little bit later, just from a hockey style, is, but anyway, yeah, so he, then, you know, January, he gets traded. Of course, my mentions blow up, because people knew, you know, him and Adam, and their friendship, and then he gets traded to Vancouver. He handled it okay. You know, not bad. I think it took a lot of reassuring that Adam's still his friend. You know, and, you know, it's sort of that, and he and Adam did, you know, write to Noah to say, you know, they're still, you know, don't worry, the friendship doesn't change just because the location does. But I think the good thing from that is, you know, and that you can bring to most of these places is, as we've, you know, as Adam goes, we follow. And, you know, if it wasn't for him going to the Canucks, I would have never found out about the Canucks Autism Network, which is wonderful. And I think needs to be done more in other hockey cities. I mean, you know, Jonathan Toews does nonprofit work for Misericordia, which is for developmentally disabled people, which is great. But, you know, and the Blackhawks have the Blackhawks charities and so on, which is good. But someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but nothing like the Canucks do. And I know the Canucks management right now is in bad shape, especially after last night.
From a hockey standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, from a hockey standpoint. But to see the community work they do, you want them to succeed. It's sort of a catch-22 is Jim Benning both, you know, let Adam go and Gustav Forsling's in Chicago, and they played each other last night. So it's sort of like you look over into Vancouver and go, whoops, okay. But it is what it is.
Well, I like hearing about this stuff too, because there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that you don't really know about. The mm-hmm. NHL really doesn't publicize as much as maybe some other sports do about some of the work that they do. Liam, by the way, was the name of the young man who was in 24/7 with the Rangers.
Yeah.
And I enjoy seeing it because these things do make a difference. Nick and I were talking a little bit before he came onto the show that he wanted people, maybe someone who's listening from the Hartford Wolfpack, to know that they can make a difference. And this definitely seemed like it was something that the right pieces fell into place, that there is, you know, it wasn't necessarily something that was planned, obviously. It was a little random that you ran into Adam Clendenning's mother and it's made a difference. But I like hearing about how that makes a difference for you and your son, because obviously this is something that maybe not enough people are talking about and maybe not enough people know. And if one person has their life changed because they get an interaction with an NHL player or an NBA player or whoever it might be, that's a really big deal too. Mm-hmm. And that's why I thought it was important that you were able to share your story, because you don't know when that's going to make an impact. And
it'll happen locally, because you do see some things. But I mean, you could look at what PK Subban's done for the hospital in Montreal, the Children's Hospital in Montreal. I mean, that's a really good example. You do see certain things, but I think the one thing is we were talking about is, you know, you have to step back, and I know there's the, as you like to call them, crab people that are probably, I think there's flashpoints of who people want to bring. Okay, especially in social media, is this person is bad because A, B, and C, and vice versa, and that's the polarization. But step back and go, these, regardless of how you think they play hockey, are still human beings. And
absolutely, yeah.
And that's,
which we
that's
all,
the
we
thing
do try
that
to make clear too, by the way, which we say all the time.
Yeah. And so
Nick, actually, because I scheduled this late, the thing is going to kick you off in a couple of minutes as soon as we go past the 9:45 mark. Is there anything you want to throw out there before it does? And if it cuts you off midway, I apologize.
That's okay. You know, I would just say, going back, you know, I guess the one thing I will jump to is, you know, for all the hemming and hawing that I see is, you know, especially watching these past two games is, you want, I mean, if this could be the Stanley Cup final, great, because I love watching these two games. You know, you watch some stuff, but it's good to see. They were both chess matches, and it was fun to watch. One live and one on TV. We're lucky to you know, have Adam as a friend of Noah. Just because, like I said, you know, Noah does have sort of friends, but, you know, to have someone like that he can look up to, sort of as a big brother, although he has an older sister. To have Adam as a big brother in a way to him that he can talk to, it has been helpful for him. So
Well, thank you, Nick. I appreciate
you coming on.
Sorry you're getting cut off at this.
That's
this
okay.
Been an interesting afternoon with this podcast.
Thank you so much.
But, yeah,
sure.
Thank you for coming on and
thanks,
talking
guys.
About
thank
it.
You.
Thank you. I like to – I was when he reached out about doing that, I was really happy. And, again, I apologize that he's getting cut off. That's an unfortunate side effect of me being an idiot and scheduling something on a Wednesday. But you don't see those things as often. And to see the difference that it makes firsthand from someone is a really big deal. Not that we needed reasons to like Adam Clendenning even more, but it's nice to know that those things are out there and that they're happening because they do make a really, really big difference. And I think guys who do it should be commended for it. And I didn't know Taves was doing it. And I didn't know Vancouver had a really good program either until he said something. So those are, it's just good. It's good to see. And now we go from the field. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, it's such a big thing. I just want to make the point because we often say, you know, that, you know, players are subject to criticism because, you know, they play on the public stage. You know, the sports industry is the entertainment industry. That's when you boil it down to brass tacks, that's what it is. And so it's very easy to, you know, criticize and, you know, like Nick was saying, you know, you dislike a player for reason A, B, or C, and especially on social media where people, you know, just draw lines and then they don't cross the line. You know, even if someone like Dan Girardi has, you know, a fantastic game or a great play, there'll be plenty of people who just roll their eyes and say, you know, oh, well, what difference does it make? You know, they won't be willing to acknowledge what they see in front of them. And it makes it hard because it is also important to have the perspective that, these are human beings, these are people. And when you get to hear stories like that where, you know, a guy like Clendenning who, you know, he doesn't have to go out of his way to play that role in Noah's life, and you get to hear a story like that, and it's so special. It tells you, you know, it's so good to see these players who have the opportunity to play on this, you know, the public forum, the public eye, and to use that in a positive way really matters, and it's important. And it's encouraging to see all the time. And it's also, you know, really special to see it up close when, you know, it's players on the Rangers. And we want to make sure to celebrate those players, especially those who, you know, those of them who don't necessarily broadcast what they're doing. So that's an awesome story.
Well, also thinking, too, about all the different ways people can enjoy the game and all the different obstacles people have, whether it's being neuroatypical or anxiety or gender identity or anything else that can be obstacles to people actually being able to have the experience of watching the game that a lot of us take for granted. Whether, you know, as he was talking about, it's the space or the noise, or whether it's, you know, something more subtle than that. You know, that's one thing that I think, you know, hockey is doing and can do probably still more of, is making that a space that's easier for more people to enjoy in the ways that they need to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
Not just
blue
seats and beers and all of that, as wonderful as that can be, and we've all experienced it. That's not the experience everyone can handle or needs.
Yeah, but and hockey at its best, I think, is a community. I'm sorry, Joe. Is a community of inclusion, and that's what when it's at its best, it is that community of inclusion. And, you know, as I'm someone who suffers from acute anxiety disorder, and so when I go to games, it's exhausting for me. Like, I feel like, you know, it's a place where I feel suffocated at times. Like, when the Rangers score, and, you know, there are random high fives from people that I don't know, you know, I just look at people like, I don't know you and you're drunk, but I'll high five you. But please don't high five me too hard. Do I have to talk to you after this? I don't know how this works. You know, I have to process all that stuff. And you know, that's just my experience with my own anxiety and stuff and, you know, my perspective on that. But it's hockey at its best can really knock down those barriers and things that people don't want to talk about. And more we're getting to see that hockey is for everyone. And that's something that I think makes it something that we all hold on to a little bit more and feel better about embracing. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, the NHL going forward with the You Can Play project a few years ago and really being the first, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the first of the four major sports in America to kind of go that route. And Nick mentioned something too, like the arena being too loud. You sit there and think, well, people complain right now that Madison Square Garden isn't loud enough. But again, you're mm-hmm. talking about not maybe understanding what everybody goes through, and not that you would think that organically at a hockey game, but it's always good to see it. And to see a Ranger specifically doing what they can to help and being a mentor to someone like that is really cool. So I'm glad we were able to get Nick on. I thought the story was really important. You know, if you can help or if you're involved in any of that, or again, if you are listening from, you know, Hartford, or you're an AHL fan, those teams usually do a lot of grassroots programs to try to build the fan base, because it's sort of the way that they keep things together. I used to be a sports writer for the New Britain Herald, and I covered the New Britain Rockhats, which was the Twins AA affiliate in the MLB, and they would do all kinds of different, you know, nights and events and all that fun stuff. So there's definitely, I think, a level of inclusion, and that's good to see, but there, it's also nice to see people getting helped, and when it's done by a Ranger, it's even better. That was a good tone to the podcast, since we've maybe been a little negative lately, but we still have to talk about the team, which is negative, maybe, maybe not. Mike, you mentioned that you had something you wanted to talk about after we got off the subject.
Yeah, it's actually a positive thing.
It's a positive thing. Jesus.
I don't know. Maybe I'll talk back more about lathering. The thing I wanted to bring up, and I think it's important because just with all the forwards and, you know, all the, you know, even Pumple on waivers and, Boo getting his call up and everything, I think it's been very, very easy to really forget about Oscar Lindberg. And, I don't think most Ranger fans would guess that he's played in 13 games this season. You know, that's kind of something that gets lost in the shuffle, because it doesn't feel like, I'm sorry, you know, it doesn't, even I had it wrong, but it's weird to think that he's been in the lineup, you know, that often, a little over half the time, when we just don't talk about him anymore. And he sees such a limited role, but in the past two games, he picked up two assists, and then in the last three games, he's put 14 shots on net. And we've seen a big part of the Rangers' success over since the last time we had a podcast is really the kind of surprisingly good play from a bottom six that has been really depleted. I know we talk so much about, what does it mean with the Zibanejad out and Buchnevich out and all that stuff, but, you know, obviously guys move up in the lineup and other guys have to plug in. And I think it's been encouraging and interesting to see how some of these guys have reacted to their opportunity to play. Of course, you know, Josh Juris was put on waivers and claimed by Arizona, so he's now out of that game of musical chairs. But, frankly, I don't really think we ever got to see the best of him. His numbers here, especially his possession numbers, were pretty rocky. We kind of knew what Juris was coming in. You know, he was that depth forward who, you know, plays that hard grinding game where you get a penalty killer, you get a guy who can kind of play all three forward positions and all that stuff. But I don't think he ever really looked as good as he did in preseason. And of course, he had the injury that derailed everything. But it's so weird to me that we've so quickly, just from, you know, where we were, I don't know, let's say, you know, 8 months ago or something, and how Lindberg was considered a real important part of the team's future. And, you know, never like a top line guy, but a part of the future moving forward without a doubt. And now he's almost like an afterthought. So I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts on that.
It's very funny you say that, and your positivity will bring out my positivity. I mentioned in today's notes on the Rangers' loss to Chicago that Lindberg has kind of made a statement. I think it's very interesting that Lindbergh was at one point a rising star last year, someone who we kind of thought was going to be a really critical part of this team. And at the end of the year, we find out that he has an injury to his hips. He gets surgery. He's going to miss some time. And the next thing you know, Lindbergh isn't even in the lineup. And when he's healthy, he's not even in the lineup. And some of his play in the beginning of the year was really rocky, and I think it has to do with the fact that he wasn't playing consistently, and people love to say, oh, that's not that big of a deal, that's an excuse, but it's really hard to get into a groove when you're not playing. And I don't understand why that's such a foreign concept at times, but in this string of games where there have been injuries and Lindbergh has had an opportunity to kind of step in and prove his worth, Oscar Lindbergh has kind of turned into a fixture on that bottom six, and I think he's going to make that decision very hard. And now, as promised, my other positive, Marek Rivik has been spectacular for the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a bottom six role, really on the fourth line, Rivik has not only played well, I kind of think Vigneault trusts him because he's playing a lot at even strength. And the offense isn't there yet, but that doesn't mean that it's totally devoid from his game, and you know, we're seeing some really good things out of him. So I think there was some concerns about what the Rangers were going to do in terms of all these injuries, but I think the reality of the situation is the forwards were so good that the Rangers could have actually survived these types of injuries, because Jensen, Rivik, and Lindbergh could easily make up a fourth line, and a quality fourth line at that. And
yeah.
Right now, when everybody's healthy, they don't have a spot on this team. And I think that says something to the depth the Rangers have at forward. Beth, anything you want to add to this positive party?
No, I agree with all of that. We have positivity and we have agreement. Who are we?
I don't know. You know, people just yell and scream about how terrible we are. So I just I sit there and think about terrible things all the time. I've been impressed with this team's resiliency, because these aren't the two games against Chicago, and I'm including the loss as part of the positives, because the Rangers, I think, played really well. This team has come together with a slew of injuries, and it's a little intoxicating to think about what it's going to be like when Buchnevich comes back and when Zibanejad is back and when Rick Nash is back. And because Nick Jensen was sent down, I think that's sooner rather than later. Those opportunities are kind of floating away for some of these bottom pairing guys like Lindbergh, like Rivik. And in the case of Jensen, he was obviously let go, but the Rangers have a lot of really good things working for them at forward. And I've loved Ryan McDonough's game this year. I've loved Brady Shea's game at times this year. I think he's really learning. There's obviously some issues on the back end that we've discussed, but the Rangers do have the pieces to be a pretty good team. It's just a matter of whether or not they wisen up about certain aspects. Beth, anything you want to throw out there? Mike was positive. I was positive. Now you have to be positive.
Oh, wait, but I agreed with your positivity. How much positivity am I supposed to come up with?
Yeah, but
you haven't
talked in a while, Beth. You have to say things and make bizarre bets with yourself. And get yourself in horrible
is this
positions.
Like me not taking a stance again?
Yes.
So many stances, but most of them are negative. I don't know. Positive.
There.
I got Jimmy Vesey, and Yes, I think he's terrible. I think they should take him out back and shoot him.
Wow.
That's what I think.
Where
that's
you
where
are.
It is.
Back
I've finally I've outed
law
myself
area.
As a crab.
Yeah, now this is what it, where
that has implications. Beth.
Yeah, it does. We're not endorsing that.
Public
yeah,
didn't
yeah.
expect this turn, did you? No, I think
no.
That's fine. That was her positive. Imagine what her negative would be.
I know, that was her being happy.
That was
having two goalies that can do the job is a good thing. Can that be my positive, or is that too obvious?
Oh, yeah, but why did that have to come after shooting someone?
Yeah, I don't know why.
They don't have to have a celebrity goalie cage death match, you know? It's not like one of them has to be voted off the island. It's just, you know.
No, and
we could this isn't a positive, but we can Can we add Shade to the list of times members of this team tried to murder members of other members of this team? Because, I mean,
yeah, I think that counts.
Hayes going for Shade's face with a skate seems.
Yeah, but just to review, we asked for something positive. Beth's response was murder and then teammates injuring each other. So
yeah, and then dental surgery.
Maybe you didn't understand the assignment, but that's okay. We'll figure it out. I don't even remember what I was going to say. Oh, the Ronta Lundqvist thing.
Oh, Jesper Fast. I've been liking not just that he scored a goal, which was due, but I've been really liking watching him be a fierce animal out there too. Kind of like JT Miller without the rage, although with some of the rage. So that's my positive, is that I think he's pulling things together, and I think we're going to see more goals from him.
But do you like him enough to lick him?
Do you like him enough to lick him? You may need to make that decision.
I you know what? I'll make one wager like that a month, and I'm so relieved to have snuck out from under this one that, you know, I'm going to give it some time.
I would guess that he would taste like lemon.
Well, what would Zuccarello soda taste like? A Zucca Cola.
Like happiness. Like it was a very brief taste of happiness. Yeah.
So yeah, I think we're gonna market that. We're gonna sell Zucca Cola.
Do we have
Everybody
to ask him or anything?
We have to.
I hope not.
But
I certainly hope not.
Imagine if that's what we do with the Patreon money. We just start canning mysterious soda that's not FDA approved.
That sounds like a good use of our resources.
That's microphones.
At least two lawsuits.
No, maybe five. The not a competition aspect from the goaltending is a point that I like a lot. Because I don't think there is a kind, this is not do or die, but sometimes Vigneault would be better served to maybe not speak at all. Like saying, I love Hank, but I love the team more is not, no, just please don't do that. Don't say that. I don't want to think about the implications that you mean when you say that, because if that's the case, why isn't, again, and not to harp on this, why isn't Girardi held to that standard? Why isn't Kevin Klein held to that standard? You open up a can of worms, and I don't think Vigneault meant anything by it. Obviously, Lundqvist is starting in Dallas on Thursday, so it's pretty clear that Lundqvist is the guy. And again, nobody questioned that. I'll say that again louder. Nobody questioned that was the case. But you do kind of get the sense that some of the things he says, these guys are not robots. They can read. Lundqvist sees that stuff. Zuccarello made a comment to Larry Brooks last year about an article that he wrote, the Zed Isn't Dead article. These guys are not, they know. And I would not be thrilled if my coach said, I love Joe Fortunato, but I love the team more, because it implicates that you're not good for the team. And that's not right. Yes,
well,
Beth,
it's also
you have thoughts.
That you've got a coach that, like, says little bitchy things about you, which is not what you want in a coach. Even if you do have the self-esteem to let it roll off you like butter off a duck, which I would hope Lundqvist would.
Did you just say butter off a duck?
Why do you need?
Butter off a duck?
Wait a second! Don't say something like magical like
duck,
that.
Beth.
And then
it's not as gross
one.
As riding the hot hand.
Okay, you know what? First of all,
you know what? We talked about children tonight.
Oh wait, I've got another thing to say.
We talked
that
about
has
children.
Nothing to do with butter or ducks or hot hands.
But
which is
I want to know where that
read,
came from.
I,
butter off a duck?
I don't really know. I realize now it was supposed to be water. I went with butter. Sometimes I get these things confused, which is why you want to have dinner at my house. But anyway, it was about Mike Sullivan. And it was about how, you know, it was about how he treats young players. And it was about that, and I'm wishing I could find this right now. I'm, like, looking through Twitter and it's not coming up. But it was about how, you know, if you're not playing well, he's going to let you know you're not playing well. But he's going to give you more than one game to figure it out. And, you're going to get a chance to, you know, straighten things out. And I just thought about what a healthier situation that sounded like than the one that we seem to have.
Mike, are you hysterically laughing in the background?
Yeah, I'm trying to hide it. I'm sorry. I keep picturing someone pouring, like, melted, like, butter you put on popcorn just on a living duck, and it's just with, like, a maniacal smile.
They don't like
but,
it.
No, I don't.
Why would you? You want to be butter like a roll? I think,
and Joe earlier saying Hank working up into a ladder. The idioms we get wrong on this are amazing.
Well, wait a minute. Working yourself
up
to a
ladder
is correct.
No, working yourself up to
a ladder is
working
correct.
Yourself. No, it is not. It's getting upset about something. It's not about getting into a groove. It's literally, it means to get yourself sweaty. I looked up the idiom when we were
talking.
Yeah,
right. It's not a good thing.
You're saying he works himself into fury and then he plays better. That doesn't make sense.
Well, maybe he does get angry. You don't know. You don't know what
he's a sweaty fury.
Yeah. Well, he sweats. He plays hockey. What do you think? He doesn't
sweat? Well, at least he doesn't cover himself in butter, Joe.
He does not cover himself in butter. I don't know what's better, that or Lunkin. What I do know is that every time that something like that happens to Beth, who is the smartest one on this podcast, may I add, she tries to fly by it like no one will know, and it never works. It never works.
Yeah.
Butter on a duck. I'm using that, butter on a duck. Listen,
but can we actually ponder the thing I was actually saying about the Mike Sullivan and how you keep players who maybe aren't playing their best game and maybe you don't psychologically undermine them?
I didn't
maybe
mean to insinuate that was a bad point. To Beth's point, which I agree with, I don't like the idea of, first of all, calling players out in the media. And Mika talked about this a few weeks ago on the show. There have been times where Vigneault says very passive-aggressive things to the media. And you look at him and you're like, why are you saying that? I don't understand. And a good example was a few days before the Lundqvist-Ranta fiasco, Vigneault saying, well, we obviously need grade-A goaltending like everybody else. Why? That's like what your friend would say in front of you and another group of friends so that they could passively aggressively make you feel bad about yourself. There's no reason to do that. And John Tortorella was
a guy who needs new friends, Joe.
I do.
Yeah,
I need friends
nice.
Who would butter a duck.
People shouldn't treat
if
you like
you
that. Are
butter
you okay?
A duck, you are not my friend. My ducks need to be buttered at all times.
Come sit on my hand and we'll talk about it. It's a hot hand.
Sit on your hand made it way, way worse.
Did it, though?
It did. No, it really did.
It, I know.
But how else
definitely...
can you ride the hot hand unless you sit
Yeah,
on?
How else are you going to ride it, Joe?
Oh, boy. We are cruising into this territory.
We talked about children tonight.
We did. That was the best line of the night outside of the buttering a duck that we were speaking about children, Beth. I think the podcast is at its best when we're completely insane. I truly believe that.
And you're pushing it back an hour has only made it worse.
Has only increased that. Well, this is a one-time thing. This is not, well, hopefully it's a one-time thing, but it's not going to happen often. And me making it to the podcast throne, which I'm now referring to it as, moments before, literally I said, I can't believe I pulled this off. And then immediately it was like, your show will start in 3 seconds. So yay me.
And there's a British lady, but you also know.
It is a British lady. If you didn't know, I'm not like racist. I don't like the Tortorella never really did that. He wouldn't so much call players out in the media, but even if he did, it was fair. And when I was writing the story about Lundqvist and Ranta and this sort of situation that Vigneault has created, I kind of fell into a rabbit hole of old stories that I had written. And one of them involved, Vigneault talking about how the goaltending has to be better. I don't know if you guys remember this, but around January last year, Vigneault made a comment that Hank had to, quote, re-become himself. And then he said, and I quote, well, I'm actually paraphrasing, there are some players who aren't playing as well as they need to be, and we all know who they are if you follow the team closely enough. And I couldn't understand why some players got this magical pass that they could never be spoken about, and other players didn't. And if anybody deserves that free pass, you'd think it's Lundqvist. So for me, for him to be held to a standard, everybody needs to be held to the standard. I don't care. I don't care that he makes the most money. He deserves the most money. I don't care that, you know, he's the quarterback. Everybody makes that. You wouldn't treat a linebacker the same way you would treat the quarterback, except they don't seem to realize that you treat the quarterbacks better than you treat the linebacker, and right now the linebacker is being treated better than the quarterback, if that makes sense. Lundqvist should be the last guy that you teach a lesson to. It's like pulling a goalie to send a message to the team, like it's not okay the way that they're playing, and you're trying to send that message. Doing that once or twice is fine, and sometimes that's a strategy that definitely works. But doing it, again, to Lundqvist, who really needs to be given the opportunity to be the guy, that's not okay, to me at least. And
I think it's fair, though. Yeah, we get, you know, and it's important, I think, to acknowledge again that we all admit that Hank can be better. But he's right now, he's just playing like, you know, an average good NHL goalie. He's not a detriment to the team. He's just like Hank off his game is still a very good goalie. You know, he's just let in, you know, some medium and low danger scoring chances that we don't see. But the high danger stuff is still classic Lundqvist. You know, he erases goals that shouldn't be goals. And we also talked about, you know, the depth he's given his defensemen. I mean, you know, that obviously, you know, I would imagine that played a factor in, you know, how the team reacted and with you know, riding the hot hand of Raanta. But I don't know. It's very, very hard to see Hank take, you know, kind of take it on the chin for this, because it's him in the spotlight right now. The media isn't talking about Girardi. Everyone's talking about, ooh, Raanta starting his third straight game, and let's zoom in the camera in on Lundqvist wearing the hat on the bench, and how about that, Henrik Lundqvist sitting on the bench, you know, and it's become like a little sideshow that distracts from the real problems with the team, and it's pretty frustrating in the grand scheme of things, but it is what it is. I mean, I don't know if it's kind of Vigneault's MO with Vancouver. I didn't really follow that well, if he was known to do things like this. But it's a very interesting thing when coaches are kind of selective with, you know, the players who they challenge publicly. Because, you know, I have no understanding of how, you know, a coach, especially at the professional level, operates and chooses, like, you know, who do I know can handle the pressure? Who will respond well if I say he needs to be better to the media in addition to saying it to him? Dynamic.
Yeah, and I have no idea who Vigneault did not challenge in Vancouver. I do know that Vigneault had a nasty habit of not allowing youth to kind of find themselves in Vancouver. That much I know, and I think that's another reason why it's so frustrating to see him do this in New York, because he was fired in Vancouver for a reason. He was far more successful in Vancouver than he has been to this point in New York. And not to say that him going to the Stanley Cup final doesn't matter. It's just he did that in Vancouver too, along with a bunch of President's Trophies. And Vigneault, it wasn't until the very end that he started losing in the first round and there were issues. So there's definitely similarities between what happened in Vancouver and what's happening right now. And that's where I get frustrated, because we've been down that road before. We went down that road and it didn't work. And now we're there again. It is 10:15. It is already far past my bedtime. Maybe not far past my bedtime, but getting close to my bedtime. anything you guys want to throw out there before we end whatever this became? Good.
Nope.
This is good. The silence.
Quack.
We're going to go ride the hot hand. Butter ducks.
Get Hank good and sweaty.
Sounds like a hell of an evening, Joe.
Into a lather. It does. You work into a lather, then you butter ducks, and then you ride the hot hand.
Yep.
Or maybe, well, it doesn't matter what order, I guess. Thank you all for listening. This is a weekly apology that we're asking you to pay for this, but if you would like to, we would sure appreciate it, and you can at patreon.com/blueshirtpanther, and that would be swell, and maybe we could buy ducks and see if we can't butter them. You can find Beth at twitter.com/BethMacklin. Mike at twitter.com/DigDeepBSB. Mike is on FanRag Sports. Beth is on BlueShirtPanther.com/Riveters, and so is Mike. And I am BlueShirtPanther, just anything.com/BlueShirtPanther. Thank you all. This was this was like a group therapy session, I think, in a way. Yeah, go butterducks.com/Patreon.
Go ride the buttered ducks.
I propose to
ride the hot hand of the buttered duck.
I propose to Mike that as we go, we can, when we say stupid things on the podcast or something funny, Mike can draw a photo, a little picture of it, and we can add it to the banner that we're currently running on Twitter. And we were going to do one for Zuka Cola. Now we have Zuka Cola, a duck covered in butter, and maybe a hot hand that we can do. So I think we're doing something right. Of course, that falls on him because he's the only artist here. But
yeah.
We love you, Mike.
Okay.
Anyway, on that note, goodbye. We love you guys.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.